Hello, and welcome to another episode of Sorcery and Superstition, your place for fantastical short stories, with your host, M. Bradley Peters. Well, this week, it's Halloween, and that means we have our Halloween special. And just like last year, we're lucky enough to have horror expert John P. Wallman as our author. This man knows how to spin a yarn, especially a dark one. And we're lucky enough that this story is not actually a standalone like last year's, but it's an excerpt from his upcoming novel, The Dark Stirs. And you guys are going to get to hear about it from the author himself. I am taking you back not just to last year's Halloween special in the spirit of the author, but also in the spirit of the interviews we used to do before the podcast. And so, without any further ado, here is my interview with John Wallman.
Brad, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Now, most of our listeners are already aware, but for those of who aren't, this isn't your first story on the podcast, is it?
No, but actually, it's a year ago this week, I imagine, that you did a story of mine called Youngblood. That's kind of related to what we're going to be talking about today. But it's been a year.
It has. Yeah, you were the Halloween special last year, and now you're the Halloween special again this year. You think this is going to be like a thing?
Make this an annual thing.
Yeah. do you generally stick to the spooky and supernatural stories?
Well, for right now, that is the case. I mean, the Dark Matter series is pretty creepy, and with a lot of dark supernatural events. So so hopefully next year we'll have I'll be working on revising the second book, and I'll get you a little excerpt for that one.
Oh, that would be nice. So what else have you been up to in the last year?
Well, COVID and all that stuff. But the big thing for me was I have a new granddaughter. Her name's Cora. Mm-hmm. And she's just the cutest little thing. And that said, I'd like to give a shout out to my girl gang granddaughters, mm-hmm. Layla, Iva, Ella, and Cora. And I just want to tell Layla she needs to be studying those words. And she knows what I'm talking about. I'm no longer unemployed. That's another big plus. What else has happened? I launched an author website a little earlier this month. And mm-hmm. I need to thank Booker Walton and his team at the MTC for putting that website together for me, especially Preston Smith. He worked really hard on bringing my my vision to reality.
Well, I went over there and I took a look at your website because you sent me a link the other day, and I think it looks good, John.
Yeah, it's turned out to, you know, that you have in your mind's eye what you would like to see, but sometimes you know that's a kind of fantasy, so you know it's probably mm-hmm. not going to be reality. But I have to say that team over there really, really put that together very well, and that's almost exactly. Mm-hmm. oxymorons notwithstanding, what I wanted to see on that site. So I'm very pleased with it. And anybody who needs a website to be designed by MTC should check them out, because they rock, and they're very reasonably priced too. So
yeah, I can definitely say I think I like it. They get my endorsement. So.
See what else I've been doing. I worked on The Dark Stirs a lot over this past year, and actually I have to give a big thanks to Lexi Money and Clementine Willowdale from Courage Publishing. They've helped me to actually rework the entire series. So instead of three books, which I think is what it had been a year ago, it's now four books. Four slightly shorter books, and this new format I think is going to make the whole story kind of work out much better. Of course, I had to come up with another title, and I'm not really good with titles, but I had to come up with another title for the second book, because the first book the earlier drafts of the Dark Stir were really long, and so I ended up cutting out almost a quarter of it and pushing that into the second book. And then, of course, I had to rework the Dark Stirs, and I did a total rewrite from front to end on that. But yeah, and that was through the subtle guidance of Lexi and just kind of slowly working at me. Why don't you try this, try that, or think about this, think about that. And, you know, to be honest, I was getting a little tired of working on that one book because I still have all these other ideas that I wanted to work on. So,
yeah.
But she worked on me and got me to make these changes. And sure enough, her wisdom has proven to be the right direction to go in. So I have a lot to thank her for.
That's nice. And Lexi is your publisher, yes?
Right. Lexi and Clementine, we're now getting in more into the marketing phase of getting the book ready. That they say they have a launch date, but they won't tell me because they know I have a big mouth. So they want to keep that secret. So, and it's probably wise of them to do so, because I would probably be spewing that right now, actually. So they're probably laughing right now and shaking their heads. But you know, it is. Once I get told, you know, of a goal that's in the future, I want to let everyone know what that is. And and it's probably a good thing they haven't told me. So, they supposedly do have a launch date for the book. So I'm curious as well as everyone else to find out what that is.
Yes, we are waiting. So it sounds like you have.
And the thing is, though, for over a year now, I'm saying, well, it's coming out later this year, or it's coming out in the spring, it's coming out in the fall, it's coming. You know, it keeps getting pushed and pushed, you know, and COVID had a lot to do with that. But you know, at one point, like a little while back, Lexi would say, I wish you wouldn't say anything about when the book's coming out, because we're not entirely certain. And I was like, well, then, you know, don't tell me, don't give me a date. So she lived up to that. She didn't tell me. So she did tell me she has one. So so we'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like you have quite a bit to be thankful for this year.
Oh, yeah. And probably the biggest thing I have to be thankful for is my wife. I mean, God bless her. She's just been a steady support for me, and she's encouraged me all during COVID, you know, when I was unemployed and all the chaos that erupted over all that. She's been my biggest cheerleader while I've worked on the Dark Matter series. And to be honest, I wouldn't even be talking to you right now were it not for her. So, you know, she's the biggest light in my life right now. And it's really all because of her that this entire a series of books have been written and now soon to be published.
Well, major props to Deb, then. We're very thankful.
Yeah, so am I. And another thing I have that's come up recently, Kindle has launched a new serialized story platform called Vella. And one of the things that happened during the revision of the Dark Stirs and even of the second book, The Dark Gambit, I have a lot of interludes and preludes and postludes and things like that are kind of like these ancillary stories, what I now call like a satellite story, because they kind of revolve around the main story of the Dark Matter series, but they aren't really... They just touch upon like background or backstory of characters and things like that. So she had me take most of those out of the main story. And so I have a lot of this material sitting around, and she said, hey, have you looked at Vella? And I said, no, I didn't even know anything about it. She said, check it out. I think your Ben Carlson story would fit really good in there. And so, not to give anything away, so you know, people can go to Vella to see the story that I put on there called The Long Shadow of Rising Night. And actually, one of my main characters, Angelique, is mentioned in that story, but she's just a little girl. Ben Carlson's her father. So it's a pretty gruesome story toward the end. And you know, so far the people who've read it have commented, sent me messages to say that they really enjoyed it. So you know, hopefully those people who are listening right now can give me a little support and head over to Kindle Vella and look up The Long Shadow of Rising Night by John Wallman and give it a read.
Yes, absolutely. You know, that I hadn't heard of that platform before either, and I looked at it, and it's very interesting.
It'll be, I think I sent you a link to the story, right?
Yes, it's it's definitely a unique opportunity for authors to get out. I love these little type of short stories. So
I'm not used to writing stories in a serialized format like that, so I had to really revise the Ben Carlson story and then add to it to bring it to an end.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another thing that I've been working on lately, and you know, I have Lexi to thank for that. So I have a lot. I have probably five or six more of these satellite stories that I plan on putting on Vella.
I'm sure we look
forward to.
They're
all related to the Dark Matter series, but just kind of revolving around and not really formally a part of it. So,
well, let's get down to today's story. This is a little departure from what we normally do on the podcast. This story is, like you already know, an excerpt from your new novel, The Dark Stirs, that we've been talking about. Can you tell us a little bit about the novel?
It focuses the excerpt. Well, first of all, the story format is focuses on two different protagonists, a protagonist for light and a protagonist for darkness. Because that's the primary conflict in the entire series from front to end is this eternal war between light and darkness and heaven and hell and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So the excerpt that you're going to be reading is from the dark protagonist, Angelique Carlson. And it comes from close toward the end of the story, maybe in the last quarter of the story of the book. When she was a few years before this point in the story, she had been attacked by what she calls a vampire. And of course, everyone around her thinks that she's speaking metaphorically, but she means it literally. And she wants to find this vampire to kind of validate to her that she wasn't going crazy, and also for the chance to capture it and study it. So she and her boyfriend Everett Preston have spent a lot of time tracking strange occurrences in the city, and they have stumbled upon the creature, and they set up a kind of command center across the street from this dilapidated house where they believe the vampire is living, and they're trying to find some kind of weakness they can exploit. So at the point that you're going to start reading it, Angelique comes to an important decision that will basically change the arc of her life from that point on. So
Yes, it's definitely a gripping and emotional point in the story, and I think it was a good choice on your part, or you and Lexi, or whoever chose that, because it definitely does. I think it represents the story probably as a whole really well, too. I haven't read the whole story, obviously, but it seems to me like it captures what you've explained to me as the theme and kind of the overall idea of your story.
Yeah, the earlier draft of The Dark Stirs was more a dark fantasy, and this newer draft, a shortened draft, kind of takes it out a little more out of the fantasy realm and more into a strict vampire story. And it's actually more like a vampire thriller, I would say, because Anders, the vampire, taunts her a good bit earlier in the story, and it's and there's this back and forth between Angelique and Anders that drives that half of the book. And the other half of the book deals with John Paul Wilkins and his destiny to be the one to stand up against stirring darkness, so to speak. So
nice. Well, thanks for coming on here and chatting with me, John. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to this time of year now.
Well,
this is
they're
very nice.
I appreciate
stories.
All that you do, and you know, and I really enjoy a lot of those stories that you've posted on your podcast. So keep it up.
Well, thank you very much. I really love doing them. And now we've come to the excerpt for The Dark Stirs. The following excerpt is taken from around 3/4 of the way into The Dark Stirs, book 1 of the Dark Matter series. It focuses on the story's dark protagonist, Angelique Carlson. She and her boyfriend, Everett Preston, have tracked down what they believe is a vampire, the very vampire that had tried to kill Angelique 3 years before. They have the creature under surveillance, studying it to find a weakness they can exploit. They want to capture it. Everett thought of everything. He had set up a large black blanket as a curtain across the farthest corner from the command center window. Their laptop and small lamp could stay on at night and not attract eyes from outside, especially from the house across the street. The house of Anders, the vampire. Angelique, however, liked to sit in a lawn chair in the shadows of the window and watch the house, wondering what was over there. Did the vampire have a coffin filled with smelly earth? Did he hang crosses upside down? Did he burn candles made from the fat of his victims? Angelique doubted most of the old legends she had read. One thing she did believe, there was something about three nights. She believed 3 nights ago, Anders had killed someone and had hung out, or slept. He did something for 3 nights before he emerged this evening at sundown to do it all over again. Angelique found she was thirsty, and she got up from the chair and went back behind the curtain, saw that the camera feed counted its time, and bent over to get a bottle of water from the cooler. She and Ev kept stocked with waters and other foods. She heard the woman through the closed window before she appeared in the laptop screen. She had that obnoxious squeal of a drunk bimbo. Perhaps she was a prostitute. More than likely, she was a barfly who wouldn't be missed for days. Had there been people living in this neighborhood, she would have woken all of them. Angelique noted the time, 12:14 a.m., maximized the live feed window on the computer, and watched. The woman appeared alone, yet she looked as if she were talking with someone. As she approached the decrepit house, she pointed at it and called out, "Here?" She tried to pull away from something, then halted. She bent over and then seemed to hover above the ground, head down, arms dangling, feet dragging on the cracked asphalt of the driveway. Angelique slipped around the curtain and went to the window to see Anders carrying the woman, one arm around her waist, as if she were nothing but a bag of clothes. They disappeared behind the house. Immediately, the dog came out and sniffed the ground where the woman had said her last, final word. Anders came back out, and the dog crouched low. "Where?" Angelique could barely hear him. He bent over and picked up something. An earring? "Go on," Anders said to the dog, waving it away. It took off. The fucking animal was an accomplice? An ugly vine deep within her punched through the packed surface of her mind, a gnarly, twisted thing that evoked a grotesque memory. A dirty, cluttered alley, a dark green dumpster, the shadows, white teeth, white tail, the dog crouching, snarling, lunging, a yip and a scramble, it running away, a gloved hand, Anders. Anders, the dog! A setup. The vine sprouted more vines, each another memory, the shadows, her childhood, her father's death, the vampire killer, John Paul Wilkins. The violent dreams, the drinking, rehab, Everett, the occult, vampires. Vampires and shadows. The vines seemed to bore holes within her skull, pushing out and around her face and down her shoulders and breast and back, boring into her belly. She turned from the window and vomited. Her knees shook and she staggered back into the chair at the command center. "Fuck," she hissed, plopping into it. An old, panicky feeling squeezed her throat. It was the old Angelique, the one she left back at that rehab with that mousy doctor. She had been helpless and empty then. As she had healed, her obsession with Anders, vampires, and the occult had become a compulsion that consumed her. It possessed her, this need to find the vampire, somehow capture it, study it, and take its secrets. She wanted to torment it like it had done to her. She wanted to become its master. This fire in her belly compelled her every day, one day at a time, to this week, to this place, right here, right now. But this now, this revelation, Anders and the dog, unbalanced her. Instead of that fire in her belly driving her like an engine, she felt more like she was on a high wire, crossing a dark chasm, the light that had been on her gone. She felt unstable, precarious. There had been nothing of chance in that alley on the night. Angelique had been a target. She had never been in control of anything. And now, in total darkness, the high wire wavering, she could slip and fall. Angelique gasped from holding her breath. The nausea paused. The ugly vines in her belly churned. She looked across the room through the window at Anders' house. What if I step off the wire, fall into the darkness below? A new fire started in her belly, the vines becoming fuel for a new engine. Falling would be her decision. She realized with the clarity of a sudden breath that she hadn't made any decisions in her life. Like a paddle ball on an elastic band, a force hit her, she bounced, only to come back to be hit by another force. She wouldn't be pushed off the high wire or lose her balance. She'd step off, a willful decision. All she had to do was walk across the street. She took a deep breath and opened the cooler for a water. She took one, twisted off the cap, and took a swig, swishing it around in her mouth to get the taste of vomit out. She spat it out and drank half the bottle, using the rest of it to dilute the splash of puke near the window. She checked the camera feed on the computer, ensuring that it was still recording. The time on the screen showed it had been almost an hour since Anders had come home. Her mobile phone showed 50% battery. She turned it off and put it back into her pocket. She grabbed a thin pocket flashlight. She stepped off the high wire and fell into the yawning darkness below. Filled with an immense relief, she crossed the street. She walked up the driveway she had seen Anders walk an hour ago. The house loomed larger here. She imagined a kind of sentience, as if the windows were eyes that watched her walk to the rear of the house. The back door had a large pet door. That explained how the accomplice dog came and went. Angelique tried the doorknob. Unlocked. It opened into a kitchen. Angelique needed a bigger flashlight. This small one only made everything gray and black. As she crossed the threshold, she wondered what the fuck she was doing. If she found the vampire, was he going to surrender? Of course, Tinkerbell, I'm your prisoner. She took a deep breath. She had jumped off the wire. There was no turning back. Where would a vampire hide? Directly across from her, a threshold opened into another room. A closed door stood in the corner to the left. She checked the door. It opened to stairs going down to a damp, musty basement. How stupid would a vampire be to trap itself in a basement? It needed seclusion, darkness. Anyone walking through the house could find and trap it in a basement. Seclusion and an exit. Where did few people go in a house? Angelique smiled. She looked up. At the top of the stairs to the second floor, she shined her light on the hallway ceiling. As she suspected, she found an attic door, the kind that pulled down with a folding ladder. There was no dangling rope, which meant someone, something, had used it to pull the door up. She opened the first door to the right, an empty bedroom, and found a chair in the closet. To help with light, she opened doors to rooms with unboarded windows. The streetlight was minimal at best. She took her time, moving slowly, and positioned the chair below the attic door. She tested her weight on it, then stood up to get the wooden ball that was a handle. She pulled gently. Then the rope slipped down about 8 inches and halted. She stepped down, then shined her flashlight on the rope handle. Was she going to pull down that door? It had springs she knew would make obscene noises. If Anders didn't know she was in the house, that door would announce her. She was at an impasse. The absurdity of her situation made her smile. She almost laughed. She felt like she was on the edge of a moment when, if she allowed it. She could start laughing and not stop. What am I doing? Fuck it, she breathed. This is what Anders wanted, for her to find him. She had jumped off the high wire, and she welcomed the abyss below. Ready or not, here I come. Angelique shut off the flashlight and put it in her pocket. She took a deep breath, reached up, and pulled down the door. The springs made one loud sound, like an unbalanced gong. She moved the chair out of the way and pulled down the attic steps. Like a fog, the smell of shit and piss wafted down the opening. And something else. She gagged, glad she had emptied her stomach earlier, but the water threatened to come up. She took a deep breath to steady her stomach. Angelique had expected a roar and teeth and pain. Nothing. She took out the thin flashlight and put her left hand over the bulb end. She turned it on. Her hand glowed red. Was that from the blood inside her? Blood that would be food for the beast up in the attic? She hoped he was already sated. Angelique looked at that glowing hand, the light within. She could use that light to show the way out of the house and away from this. Her future was up there, however much it stank. She spread the middle finger and ring finger. A thin shaft of white shot up to the ceiling. She directed that light to the first step and put the weight of her right foot on it, lifting up. I have to know. She placed her left foot on the second step. I have to know. She had to see Anders, even if it was for a moment before he killed her. Everything she had suffered, her shadows, the night, PTSD, her abortive relationship with John Wilkins, her hiatus, it all formed a nexus to this next step. I have to know. As her head neared the opening, the stench, like some old latrine, threatened to knock her down. She took a deep, gagging breath and held it, bringing the glowing hand to the right edge of the attic's opening. She took another step. The humid, rancid darkness pushed down on her. Her heart pounded in her chest, echoing in her ears. Her lungs screamed for air. She lifted the lighted hand higher and spread her fingers. The triangular beam illumined a bald, white head not 10 feet away. The vampire lay prone on the floor, atop a large, thick sheet of plastic that covered most of the attic floor. Next to Anders lay the woman, still as a piece of driftwood. Her blouse had been ripped off, her neck and left shoulder covered in drying blood. She gasped, finally, taking a deep breath. Nothing moved. She removed her hand from the end of the flashlight. The darkness pushed back. She stepped up into the attic. Anders the vampire looked like a corpse with pants, blood covering most of his face and chest. His belly distended as if he were pregnant. Like a tick, he had gorged himself and rolled off his bitch. The woman looked chalky, making her smeared lipstick seem bright like blood. Her eyes, like faded blue marbles, were fixed on the rafters above her. A small pool of blood, the size of a plate, cooled on the plastic beneath her neck and head. Her hand almost touched his ungloved hand. A dead bride for the undead vampire. Angelique stepped onto the attic floor, closer to the vampire, bending to avoid hitting her head on the angle of the rafters. The flashlight revealed the woman's tattered neck, chewed and ripped open. The light caught something in the far corner. She found a number of wigs, garment bags, stuffed gym bags, a dozen pair of shoes, a radio, cleaning wipes, a garbage can, and a number of gallon jugs of water. He lived up here. He killed up here. Angelique squatted beside Anders. She grit her teeth and grabbed his gloved left hand, making certain not to touch his skin. It flopped down on the plastic. He was as still as the corpse beside him. Angelique wondered if feeding caused a kind of napping for digestion. She had so many questions, and she would have the opportunity now to find answers. Angelique found the discarded glove, dyed black. It had no soft inner lining, but the workmanship was exquisite. Her mother owned expensive gloves. Angelique had learned what to look for in a pair. The quirks and fourchettes of this glove were small and intricate. The leather felt strange. She reached down, grabbed the middle finger of the one on Anders' left hand, but kept her eyes on the exposed right. Cold hand, long, white fingers, and gently yanked the glove off. The vampire's head moved. Still as a corpse. She put both gloves in her empty jacket pocket. She reached into her jeans pocket and pulled out her phone. She called Everett. Something happened? She laughed and then gagged again at the smell.
You can say that. Get the van and all the stuff we need to get our little vampire.
What? I'm not ready here.
Ev, dear.
She stood and pushed Anders' head with her foot. She looked at the protruding belly.
I have a feeling we have plenty of time.
And that's it. That is our excerpt for this week. If you really like the story, then go subscribe to John's Facebook page and follow him for more information about when this book is going to release so you can get it. Okay? And I don't know what else to say. It was a fantastic story, and I loved reading it, and I hope to look forward to more of these Halloween specials in the future. So, stay tuned. For in a couple weeks, we'll have our next story. I believe it will be The Water Pendant, or some similar story, by Stephen Seal. He is another veteran author of the podcast. He had a couple of stories last year, and I will be glad to welcome him back to the podcast. So, I hope you guys will come and tune in for that. Until then, I hope you all have a fantastic day.